found your way to another episode of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. As always, appreciate you tuning in. One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell presented by SodaStick. Go to SodaStick.com to get your original Minnesota-inspired goods. That's SodaStick.com, designed by Minnesotans for Minnesotans. Use code One-on-One for 15% off your next order. Absolutely love some of the SodaStick products that involve the Minnesota Wild, of course. You've got the Lou Nanny t-shirt. Of course, Lou hanging it up after 60 years of the high school TV broadcast. You got the Marcus Foligno, the Moose t-shirt. Gotta love that one as well. And how about their hats? I can't get my oldest son, Jake, to take that Mike Modano number 9 hat off his head made by SodaStick. He absolutely loves it. So again, the Masters this weekend, they've got golf-themed goods as well. The land of 10,000 golf clubs. Their pickleball stuff. The Beauty League is coming back this summer. They make the Beauty League products for you or your kids. So again, SodaStick.com, code 101 for 15% off your next order. My guest today in just a couple of minutes will be Richard Bachman, Iowa Wild goaltending coach. So it'll be a great time to catch up with him, given that Jesper Volstead just got his first NHL win and first NHL shutout. Richard Bachman played a long time in the NHL and the American Hockey League as well, so we'll talk about that with him in a couple of moments. But as of last night, the Minnesota Wild eliminated from Stanley Cup playoff contention. The Wild had made the playoffs each of the last 4 seasons. The last time they missed the postseason was 2019. And the Wild overall, 13 total playoff appearances in franchise history, including 10 of the last 11 years prior to this season. You can look to the injuries. You can look to the early season struggles and the eventual coaching change. You can look to a number of things with this hockey team. It just felt like from really the preseason, where they played well, albeit the preseason, but the Jarrett Spurgeon injury in the preseason sort of set this team into what seemed like a constant dark cloud at times hanging over them. The blown leads in some hockey games, particularly at home in the middle part of the season, you know, January into February, certainly cost this team. And again, it felt like they just could never get enough traction. Every time they got close to a playoff spot, they'd lose a player or 2 players or more. They'd go into a bit of a skid. They'd blow a game and get 1 point instead of 2, or no points instead of 1 or 2 in the standings. And ultimately, when they come up, you know, what it looks like will be 5, 6, 7 points behind a playoff spot when it's all said and done. There are going to be a number of things to look back at, but it will be awfully frustrating, I'm sure, for the players and the coaches to have come up just a little bit short. And one of the big things has been trying to beat the teams ahead of them in the standings. Michael Russo had the stat the other day. I think it's just the Wild have won like 8 of 30 games against teams that are above them in the conference standings right now. Winless against Dallas, Colorado, and Winnipeg, the 3 top teams in the Central Division. 0-10-1, the Wild's record in games against the Stars, the Avalanche, and the Jets. Look, they took care of business, the Wild did, against teams below them in the standings. It allowed them to stay in this playoff stretch for quite some time. Give the players credit. They could have quit. They could have packed this thing a while back. They didn't. They got to the, you know, final 4 or 5 games of the regular season before they were mathematically eliminated. But not beating the top teams and not winning games at crucial times and not protecting leads at crucial times in the season, to me, will be one of the biggest factors as to why the Wild missed the playoffs for the first time in 5 years. The goaltending at times wasn't consistent enough, and certainly there were some players that just had down years. And the injury bug, coupled with all that, losing so many leaders to this hockey team at crucial times, was just too much for them to overcome. So they'll get a look at some young players down the stretch, including Volstead and Nett. Liam Ogren just called up to the NHL. We'll see when he makes his NHL debut, if it does come this season. You'll see more of Murat Hustandinov and Marco Rossi. And we'll see if Kirill Kaprizov can continue to put together and sort of just finish off another magical season from a point perspective. And if the Wild can just finish on a strong note, winning a couple or more of their final few games, and to finish above 500 and kind of at least, you know, have a solid finish to the season, I think will be something that Wild fans can at least hang their hat on as far as this team competing right down through game number 82. We'll have plenty more podcasts for you coming in the offseason. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and like and share this with all of your fellow hockey fans. I appreciate you tuning in. My guest today, Richard Bachman, goaltending coach for the Iowa Wild. He played 49 NHL games, almost 300 more in the American League. Spent two seasons at Colorado College, and he is the Iowa Wild goaltending coach. He's been the Iowa Wild goaltending coach, I should say, since 2020. Just a great conversation. We talk a lot about Jesper Wallstedt, what he's seen from Wallstedt in his second year in North America, just how proud he was of Wallstedt to bounce back after a tough NHL debut against the Dallas Stars and get a win and a shutout at that against the Chicago Blackhawks just a couple of days ago. We'll talk about his time in the American Hockey League. We'll talk about the sort of the changes in goaltending today. Way different, the position, than even when Richard played himself at the pro level. It's just the technical side of it, the athletic side of it, the training side of it. So we'll get into some of that. And we'll also spend some time, obviously, talking about the Iowa Wild season, which unfortunately, much like the Minnesota Wild season, never really completely got on track. It's been a tough go for Iowa down there, but a lot of young players are playing well and playing big minutes, and that's certainly a silver lining in what's sort of been a lost season, unfortunately, at the AHL level for the Wild organization. And so let's turn it over now to my interview today. Thank him greatly for his time. He's become a pretty good friend over the years, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with Iowa Wild goaltending coach Richard Bachman. Richard Bachman joining me, and it's always a pleasure to chat with you, Bacher. How are you? How's the family?
I'm doing well. It's always good to chat with you too, Joe. Family's good. Family's good. We're transitioning out of hockey season here, and we're full go into baseball mode at the Bachman household, and then competitive dance, more of a year-round thing, but that's ramping up as well. So busy, but lots of good stuff.
I think I know the answer to this question. A lot of fans could probably look at the standings, but I'll ask it anyway. How's the season gone so far in Iowa?
Yeah, it's been a challenging year down here, but we've seen a lot of growth and development from the young prospects. And I think you guys are kind of seeing it with the last game he had. But for me personally, with the goalies, with Wallstedt taking some big strides this year. So there's definitely some good positives out of the season. We'd like to a few more wins from where we are right now, but we're trending in the right direction and moving this thing forward.
From a player standpoint, a coach standpoint, obviously it's a very difficult situation to be in, but what can you learn about players this time of year where the postseason's not in the cards, but yet you're still asking them to go out there, compete, and try to get better every day? What can you learn about a player in this situation?
Yeah. And we've been fortunate with how the American League has structured its playoffs, that up until recently, and even as we speak right now, mathematically, we still have a chance to get in. But with them adding the extra playoff team, we've had a lot of meaningful games over the last month. And so it's been a great opportunity for our young guys to play in those meaningful situations, and had a lot of really close games, but I give a lot of credit to our young guys. Like every night they come out and they compete, and they're doing their very best to stick with our structure. So it's been good. And the guys have shown a ton of character. We've had a lot of tough matches. We played some really tough opponents, playing the previous Calder Cup champions last weekend. And, you know, we weren't very good the first night, and guys, you know, their character came through, and we had one of our best games of the season the following night, and put them on their heels and ended up losing a shootout. But we've had a lot of meaningful hockey, and these guys have really stayed the course and done a good job with it.
I know you guys won't make any excuses, but I know it just hasn't been really a fair shot for you much of the year. The opening night lineup that yourself and the rest of the coaches, including head coach Brett McLean, had penciled in right on the whiteboard. You're moving names around and you're excited during training camp. Here's what we're going to look like. And I don't think for one single game you've even gotten that. I mean, as soon as Jared Spurgeon got hurt in the preseason for Minnesota, your only veteran defenseman, Dakota Mermis, you know, your captain, goes up to the NHL and spends basically the whole year with Minnesota. I know you guys won't make any excuses, but the reality is you just haven't had much of a fair shake all year long because of injuries and call-ups. But in some ways, that's the American League, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you've been around and been through it. The rosters are fluid. Things change in a heartbeat, and you just have to adapt and overcome. And yeah, it's not what we maybe had penciled in the beginning, but it's also given us a great opportunity to play some players that maybe wouldn't have played so much and kind of put them in situations that they might not have seen. So overall, for the development of the guys, it's given them good opportunity, and we've gotten to see some other players and kind of develop some guys that wouldn't have had that chance. So there's definitely positives from it. It's like you said, it's the American Hockey League. Every team goes through it at some point. It seems like we've gone through it quite a bit this year, but that's part of the gig.
You've been around Brett McLean for a few seasons now. He's a first-year head coach, though. What have you learned about the man they call Mac as the years moved along, and he continues, I'm sure, to grow and develop as a first-year AHL head coach?
First and foremost, he's just a great person, and I think that's – and he prides himself on that. He won't say that because he's humble, but you can see it in the culture he's building here. It's people first, treating people right, doing things the right way. And he's really, he's brought that down with him from where he was. And then it's been fun to watch him grow. And you can see from the beginning of the year till now, just his confidence and belief in what he's doing. And it's definitely, you can tell from where we're at in the season and the amount the guys still with how good their effort and their character is each and every night. That's a direct reflection on what he's done.
Was there a coach or a couple of coaches when you played Bakker that you felt like the guys really played for, right? A lot of times guys play for each other. They play for the room. They play for the organization. But there can be times where you rally around a coach and really dig in because you believe in what he's putting out there. From your playing experience, does any situation or part of a year or a whole season stand out where the team really rallied around, hey, yeah, maybe we don't have the most talent on paper, but we're going to battle for this guy because he's got our back and he's put the right culture in place?
Probably the best example for me would be Todd Nelson. And it goes a little bit both ways of what you're saying, because he was really good at getting the guys to play for the guys and for each other. But he created such a great environment and the relationship and the open door policy between him and the players that you wanted to go to battle for him just as much as you knew he was going to battle for you on the back end of things. So that's kind of the number one example I can think of. And I do see a lot of that in Mac, in how we're open, honest about every situation. Players know they can come and talk to him at any point in time, whether it be about hockey or about life outside of the rink. And he's really created that open air in the locker room where everyone's in it together, from the staff to the players to the trainers. Everyone feels comfortable around each other and wants to do it for each other.
When Todd Nelson's had himself a heck of a run behind a bench at a number of different levels, and now, as you just talked about, defending Calder Cup champion head coach with the last couple of years with the Hershey Bears. What's the relationship, or what should the relationship be like between a goalie coach and a goaltender? I mean, you played net for a number of years pro. Now you're on the other side of it as a coach. What does an ideal relationship look like there?
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a unique one from my perspective, is just the nature of the position. It's sometimes hard to, or difficult for those that have never played the position to know what it's like inside of that blue paint. And so for me, it's creating a friendship, creating a bond with these guys, letting them know that, hey, I get it. I see it from your guys' perspective, where a lot of outsiders maybe won't see that. And just kind of developing that bond, so they know that you have their back in explaining what goes on from a goalie's mindset when you're in the coach's room or you're talking to management or anyone in that. And just so they know you have their back. And then you can also rely on experience when they're going through certain times, whether it be good or bad, you have a better sense of what they're feeling and you want to be able to keep them confident. I think the biggest part of being a goalie coach, yes, you have the technical side and you're always trying to improve on physical aspects of the game, but it's so much goaltending, and they've always said this, is mental. And it's just making sure that when that puck drops, they're in the best headspace possible to get the job done. And I think by creating a really good foundation and bond with the goalie and myself, it allows us to then make sure we're all good in the mental aspect of the game.
I want to spend a few minutes talking about Jesper Wallstedt. You guys around the locker room will call him Wally. Love that nickname, by the way. But first off, how excited were you for him personally to get not only his first NHL win, but his first NHL shutout on Sunday in Chicago against the Blackhawks?
Oh yeah, I mean it was incredible, and I think what made it even better was the fact that he had to go take a licking in Dallas to then go get this one. It didn't just happen easy. He didn't just go up and get his win and shut out and all is good. He had to go through some dark times and some soul searching and climb back and kind of regain his confidence, regain his game here to then go do it. So he put in a lot of work and showed a lot of mental toughness and being able to bounce back from that to then step in. And doesn't matter who you're playing or whatever, you get a win in the National Hockey League. It's great. And a shutout is even better. So it's super proud of everything he kind of went through and the maturity he showed to surmount that kind of dark time to then be able to do what he did.
I'm sure you had a little bit of a proud father moment. I mean, you are a dad yourself, but some of these kids that you are coaching now, various roles with them, especially the goaltenders being a little bit closer to home for you. So did you send him a note? Did you reach out to him? Can you share anything there without giving away maybe too much about after his first NHL win?
Yeah, no, I kept it pretty simple because he's still got a job to do the rest of the way while he's up there. But just told him congratulations, super proud. You know, there's a reason we put in all that work and we do all that, and you've done the work and you got rewarded for it tonight. So he was he fired back. That one felt, I won't say exactly what he said, but that one felt really good. And I can feel all the work that we've been doing, it paying off. So for him to recognize that was really good. And then wanted him to enjoy it. I told him, enjoy it. But one of the big things we've been talking about since that Dallas game is part of that transition from pro, and especially from the American Hockey League to the NHL, whether you're a goalie or a player, the roles change and you're not playing every night. Those practice habits between your starts when you're trying to make your way into that National Hockey League are so important. You can't take any practice for granted. Your habits, your work ethic, everything has to be on. So I said, enjoy it. But when you get back on that ice, habits, work, you got to get right back to it and move on and get ready for the next one.
Really good stuff. And awesome, obviously, that his family was able to be there as well, since I know they had a little trouble getting down to his NHL debut in Dallas back in, a few months back. You talked about those practice habits and those details. And when I spoke to you before Wallstedt's second NHL start, which ultimately became the win and the shutout against the Blackhawks, you said that was something you guys focused on, right? He got shelled in Dallas. Team didn't play great, but he, I'm sure, wanted a lot of that game back. And you also told me that he sort of stewed on that game for a while. He's told the local media in Minnesota that as well, that he watched that game back several times. What did you see from Jesper Wallstedt when he came back down a bit, maybe humbled after his NHL debut?
Some of it was the humbling of that Dallas game, but he was, you could tell his confidence was down a little bit. And I don't know if it necessarily was just the one game, but he had a tough stretch where he went to Sweden with the NHL club, came back, played a little bit, got called up, then got hurt with us, and then back up. And so he was he had a lot of travel, a lot of in and out of playing and not playing and practicing, not practicing. So it was just a matter of kind of just resetting where he was and reminding him of what he does so well and find that confidence in how he plays. And, you know, it took a little bit, but then he was able to find it. And then he's put together some really nice hockey for us since then. But yeah, it was probably the best thing that could have happened to him, is learning to go through that. And another side of it is when he was up on that call up after the Dallas game, like he wanted to get right back in there. And I think if you remember Gus, before Wally came back to us, he played three or four in a row. And while Wally wasn't expecting to just start because he's there, he took it personal that they didn't want to put him back in the net. And I think he's used that too, his drive to make sure when he gets opportunities that he's ready to seize them. And obviously we saw in Chicago, he was ready for the task of taking on that opportunity.
That's interesting, that competitive side of him, right? Like he and the fact he took it a little bit personally. What's his demeanor and personality like from that competitive standpoint?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. I don't think it surprises people that he's competitive. I think everyone assumes all the, athletes are competitive, right? But he has such a quiet, calm demeanor in the net, even outside of the ice surface. While he is witty and pretty funny, he's not a super fiery on the outside competitor. Which I like, because I like the goalies to be calm and composed and not really show a lot of emotion, be the backbone back there, steady, calming presence, in which he does a great job. But internally, he is super competitive. He wants to win really bad. He wants to perform at an extremely high level every time he's in the net. And so when he doesn't live up to his own expectations of that, he gets on himself, and he wants to do it.
What are some of Volstead's biggest technical strengths from a goaltending perspective? What do you like the most about his technique?
Before we get into the technique side, I think it's one of his biggest strengths is his ability to read plays. His hockey sense is extremely high. And then with that, then you get into, because he's ahead of plays, he's putting himself into good position. His tracking and rebound control are two of his best attributes, I would say, which allows him to control pucks, put pucks in good areas, obviously make that first save, but he really limits the second and third opportunities, the really dangerous opportunities, with his tracking and his rebound control. And from there, he's done a really good job. We've highlighted from coming over from Sweden, where the rink's a little bit bigger, plays are a little bit longer, more drawn out. It's not quite as fast because of that ice surface. He's really had to put an emphasis on his mobility and his lateral movement, getting to position quicker. And he's really, it took a little bit, but he's really bought into that. And now he's really seeing the benefits of being there early, because that allows him to use his tracking and his rebound control. And so now his pace is starting to catch up to with where it needs to be at this level. From there, the rest of his technical game is solid. But those are kind of his strengths that allow him to simplify the game and make it look, even though it's not easy, he makes it look effortless at times.
What's an area that you'd like to see Volstead improve on this offseason?
Just his habits. So for it goes back to like those practice habits. So whenever he hits that ice, and I think for a lot of young players, when you've been the best in the world in your age group, for the most part, you can just go and play and you're going to do well. And now that that pyramid of talent is getting smaller and smaller, all the little details, all the muscle memory that you create while practicing, you need every ounce of it to be consistent and be on the top of your game at this high level. So that's going to be the big focus. Last summer, it was his overall conditioning, and he tackled that no problem. He came back in a great place physically. He can still work on that and improve there. But it'll just be now, whenever we're on that ice, no matter what we're doing, our habits, we're doing things the right way consistently, so that there's no on and off switch. And he, like I said, from that Dallas game, that call up till now, he's done a good job implementing that into practice. And I think you're starting to see it in his everyday game. And so that'll be more of the message, is when you get back to training and we get back on that ice, we got to be doing things the right way, so that we don't have to try and turn it on when the games come back to us.
Not going to completely hold your feet to the fire here, but give Wild fans, if you're comfortable, some reassurances that, yes, in your opinion, Volstead is potentially at least the number one goaltender at the NHL level, the goalie of the future for the Minnesota Wild. Are you comfortable yet, even though he has just a couple of NHL games, saying from what you've seen, what you know about him, that he could be the future?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not just saying that to say that. He just his for me, hockey sense and reads are really hard to teach. And he's got the size and the frame and the technique to go along with that. And so he's a 21-year-old kid that's already done really, really good stuff in the American Hockey League. Obviously, now he's got a national hockey win and shutout. He's just going to keep maturing. But he's such a bright kid. He sees the game, and you're seeing he's willing to put in the work to get it done and accomplish what he set out to do. So while it's not going to be just a smooth ride to the very top, it's going to take a little bit of time. There's going to be some bumps in the road. He has that maturity and that drive to get there, and he's going to do it.
I want to jump to your playing career for a couple of minutes, Bakker. Did you grow up playing in Salt Lake City?
Nope. So born in Salt Lake, but I actually only lived there till I was like two. I don't even really remember it. I had family living there. Then moved to Colorado from there for a brief stint. And then my parents decided that my mom's family is from Rochester, New York. They decided they were going to buy a bakery in upstate New York, Saranac Lake, small town of 2,000 people right next to Lake Placid. So I think we moved there. I was about 7 years old. And that was kind of the start. No one had really played. My older brothers played a little bit of street hockey and stuff, but no one played ice hockey. Middle of winter in upstate New York, everyone just played hockey. So we hopped on the ice, and that's where it started.
That's kind of crazy. What do you remember about your youth hockey days? Were you always a goaltender? Did you think you had obviously you love the game, but did you think that you had a chance to play at some high level at some point?
I don't know if I necessarily realized that I could do it. That was just always the dream, was to play hockey. I remember growing up and people like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And everyone says, well, I want to be an athlete, or I want to do this, or what else would you want to be? And I never really had another answer except playing hockey. And I just loved the game. And I think it's somewhere inside me, I knew I was going to play hockey. And I didn't, not saying that anyone listening shouldn't have a backup plan. Still went to school, still got my degree and all that, but I just wanted to play hockey. And from there, I was pretty fortunate being in upstate New York at that time, but I was from Colorado, came from Colorado. So the Avalanche moved there. They won the Stanley Cup. So I remember watching them a lot, and Patrick Waugh, but then we had Mike Richter and we had Dominic Hasek and Brodeur, all kind of in that New York area. So I had some really good goalies to watch. And I just always loved the position. I remember getting to try it. And the first time I threw the pads on, first shot, made a glove save. And that's kind of when I just fell in love with it and just always wanted to play goalie from there. Even though I split and played out a little bit, I always tended to head back towards the net whenever I could.
Coming out of Colorado College, what were your expectations turning pro?
That's actually a bit interesting. So I did 2 years at Colorado College. Started both years, my freshman and sophomore year, kind of felt like I had, besides maybe winning a national championship, accomplished pretty much what I could accomplish at the college level. And I felt the opportunity with Dallas at that point was pretty open, and it was a good time for me to step in and turn pro. And so everything's good. You sign your contract, everyone's excited, you're coming in, you're leaving school early, all is good. You get through training camp, felt like I had a really good training camp. And then boom, I was sent right to the ECHL right out of the way. So I was kind of like, whoa, what did I just get myself into? But it actually ended up being probably the best thing for me. I was able to go and we had a really good team in Boise, Idaho, and I was able to play a ton and learn a lot from some really good older guys there. So it worked out, but it was a bit of a shell shock. You go from a top college hockey program and you got great facilities and you have everything in front of you. And then back then, the ECHL, like, you're bringing in your own breakfast and your own protein, and you're fending for yourself a little bit more there. So it was a little bit of an adjustment.
Were you living at Columbia Village Apartments there with the rest of the team?
Yes, sir. With beds from, I think the beds were from the hotel downtown from 1975 at that time. So, yeah.
And the booster clubs got the linen closet there, and they're putting all the products into your apartment for you.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So. Maybe I know about that. It sounds like I do.
I will say Boise was an amazing town.
Yeah, so great spot. Great spot. I love my time there. I know you and I have talked about that, but it is interesting how much the minor league levels have changed, right? Like you're saying, when you started, breakfast at the rink wasn't a thing. You were on your own. Now a lot of these teams, especially at the American Hockey League level, I can't really speak for the ECHL anymore, but such good resources. How much does that help these guys become better pros when NHL teams are now owning their AHL teams and putting in all this money into the development process?
I'm sure that some of the older coaches would have go even further, but it is a night and day difference from 15, 20 years ago to where it is today. And like you said, the resources that we provide for our players are second to none, from breakfast and lunch every day to supplements to giving them access to mental skills, sports psychologists, hand-eye training, anything and everything that we feel will help them develop into better athletes, better people, and kind of ease that transition is provided. So it's pretty cool to see what these players are provided with, but then also to see how much they use it and value what they're given.
You have an AHL travel story nightmare. I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of them, but take us through some of the days in the American League. You were in Oklahoma City. You were in Cedar Park, Texas, just outside of Austin. You were in upstate New York when the Canucks farm team was there. So you've seen kind of very different parts of the AHL's travel grind. And I'm sure somewhere along the way, something's got to jump out.
Yeah.
And by the way, feel free to say it was a travel that I planned and screwed up for the, you know, the year we worked together. And I was,
I got one of those, Joe.
Yeah,
we could start with that one. There was our gentleman that was scheduling our travel for the upcoming season. Our schedule was San Diego to Tucson to Texas. And so he schedules all this travel, and then he decides that he wants to go up to the NHL to broadcast for the rest of the year, so he's not around to do the travel that he booked. So we fly out, we go, I think, Des Moines, Dallas to San Diego. We're there for a couple of days. Then we have, it's about a, I don't know, 5-hour drive from San Diego to Tucson, 5-6-hour drive. But we decide we'll just hop in an airplane to make it a little bit quicker. Well, that first flight gets delayed a little bit, of course, but then we decide that it's probably better to fly 3 hours back to Dallas to then wait in the airport for another 3 hours to then fly back to Tucson. So we ended up spending, I think, I don't know, 14 hours at the airport that day when we could have just gone on a bus and been there in six.
I'm not taking any of the fault or blame on that one. All right.
We forgot to give you a map of where we were headed. We were just backtracking.
I don't even remember that instance. And again, I'm not taking the fault there. What did you make of Oklahoma City? Obviously, it was kind of a cool town. When I was in Houston, the Barons were there. And so the Arrows would play the Rampage in San Antonio. You play the Texas Stars outside of Austin, travel to Oklahoma City. The team's not there anymore, obviously, but they had a history of the Central Hockey League. Then eventually the American League is the Oilers farm team. Assuming that's where you play with Todd Nelson, right? Or under Todd Nelson, right? So,
yep, correct.
What was Oak City like?
Oh, it was awesome. I really, really enjoyed my time in Oklahoma City. It's funny you bring up Oklahoma City because it's very similar to me. It feels very similar to Des Moines. It's a bigger city with a small town feel to it. You can get everywhere in 15 minutes, but they have tons of amenities. And yeah, we really, my family and I really enjoyed our time there in Oklahoma City. It was a good place to play.
Tell me about your first NHL win.
First NHL win was in Staples Center against LA Kings. I believe we won 2-1. So I had been called up one time before, and I actually got in third period the year prior. So I at least had been on the ice in the NHL. But then got the nod, and just so many different emotions. I remember going back, we were staying in LA Live, and I remember after morning skate, just going back to my room, and you got the adrenaline's already pumping and the game's still, you know, 6 hours away, and you're trying to nap and either you can't nap and you're just trying to hold it all together. You're excited, you're nervous. But then you just try and get through your routine and kind of remind yourself that it's the NHL, but it's still the same game you've been playing since you were 6 years old. Just got to go out and and play and relax. And remember, it was, I believe it was sold out and got all the big lights and stuff. And so it was a very memorable experience. I remember before, I remember after the game itself. I barely remember it. You just kind of get in the zone and go play.
Who scored the first goal at the NHL level that you gave up?
That's a great question. It was in that game. Might have been Doughty.
That's okay. Future Hall of
Yeah,
Famer,
that's
right?
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm on a few of those highlight reels where it's a offensive highlight reel, but there has to be a goalie in the other net. So I've been in a couple of those as well.
From your time in Vancouver, how good were the Sedin twins? What were they like?
They were incredible. And I know a lot of people say that, but not only were they incredible players and just their vision and the way they could communicate with each other without even speaking, that was amazing to watch. But it hit home my first training camp in Vancouver, and it hit home every year after that. But I remember walking in the room, they say hi, and it didn't matter who you were, where you played, what your role in the organization was, they would always say hi, ask how you're doing, make sure you had everything. Like, they were just amazing humans that cared about everyone. And you would have no idea that they were at the highest level possible and what they could do on the ice. Like, you would never know. They were just such great people and treated everyone with such respect. So I always had great admiration for those guys, and always think about it when new people are coming in, or you're at a training camp and say you have someone coming up from the ECHL or SP or wherever it may be, like, it doesn't matter. They always were just great people to everyone, but it was so hard to tell them apart to this day. Like, you walk in and you're like, man, which one? So, but they were awesome. It was a really, really amazing experience to get to play with those two.
I want to get your opinion on Marc-Andre Fleury, who you've crossed paths with, obviously, being in the organization the last couple of years, training camp and such. And I'm sure at some point you were on the ice across from him, whether it's warm-ups or on the bench. Like, I don't know that for sure, but I would guess that that had to have happened. And regardless, like, just watching him from afar, being a goaltender growing up, what are your impressions of Marc-Andre Fleury, and really what has made – him so impressive in his long Hall of Fame career?
Yeah, I think the first thing that stands out, and a lot of people say it, but it's just his passion and love for the game. And if I'm being honest, I think hockey can use more Marc-Andre Fleury's in it. He is a veteran player that plays like he's 12 years old, and he just loves to play hockey, and it's infectious. Like, it carries through the room. Yes, it's a job. Yes, there's stress, and you're asked to perform at a high level, but he's never lost the love for the game. And I think that's really what makes him truly special. And you see it this week with the pranks that are happening with him and Duhame. He just loves what he gets to do for a living, and that's contagious. And it's an awesome reminder for everyone and all the other pros out there. Like, we are so fortunate to be able to work in this industry and get to play a kid's game for a living. So I think that's part of the reason why he still can play at the age he is. And then obviously there's a freak athletic ability that he possesses that also helps carry him. But then it's also his humbleness and his ability to want to get better. You sometimes run into older guys and they're kind of stuck in their ways on how they got there and what got them there, and they don't want to change. And I remember the first time I met him, we were on the ice at training camp and we were doing a drill, and I'm just, I'm watching him just as much as he's probably even thinking about even asking me a question. And right after the drill, he's like, hey, like, I was doing this, like, I felt like this, like, what did you see? What would you recommend in this situation? Like, he just wants to continue to get better and better, even after playing, what is this, 18 years? So I think that's another reason why he's able to do what he does.
How cool was that for you personally to be on the ice as a young coach? You played in the NHL. You had a great pro career. But here's a guy that's going to go down as one of the greatest goaltenders ever, and he's asking you for what you saw.
Yeah, it was a bit surreal, if I'm being honest. In those situations, you kind of want to just take a step back. He knows exactly what he needs to do, and but for him, that wasn't the case. It didn't matter if I was a young coach or, and for him, he'd probably ask anyone, but he wants to get better and he wants advice. And so for me, it was a really neat experience to be able to just give him my 2 cents, but also kind of a almost a reassuring feeling too, like, hey, he trusts me enough to ask my opinion. Like I can do this job, and I belong being able to coach.
Why are save percentages down across the NHL?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think the game itself, over the last 15 years or so, they have wanted more scoring. They have implemented, whether it be gear changes, rule changes, to try and achieve that. And so I think some of it might be you're starting to see the product of those changes come into play. And then I think the game is getting so fast, faster and faster every year. The equipment, the sticks, everything is just a little bit quicker. And so you're starting to see the skill of these players really take off. And kind of when you see these, and I'd have to go back to verify, but I remember when we first did the pad size change, I think there was a little bit of uptick in a lower save percentage, uptick in goals. And then it takes a year or two, and then the goalies kind of catch on and adapt and change. So I'd be curious to see if this trend continues because they want more scoring, or if the goalies and what we're doing evolves just a little bit further to try and negate that.
How has the technical side of goaltending evolved? You could probably talk about this for hours, right? Because you've played, you're coaching now, you talk about equipment changes, all that stuff. You mentioned earlier hand-eye coordination, all the vision training now that's out there for goaltenders, the video that players, both skaters and goalies, can watch. But if there's a way to summarize how the technical side of goaltending has changed, how would you sum it up?
Yeah, I think it went from being an athletic position to more of a boxy blocking, super technical driven position where you put yourself in the right position, puck's got to hit you. And now we're almost transitioning back with the speed of the game and how quick you have to be playing a little more from your feet. So we're getting a little bit back into more of an athletic position with a technical undertone. So I think you're starting to see a little bit more of a hybrid, but you're also seeing you're seeing some goalies get out of that technical boxy look that we've seen for so many years and being way more athletic, almost like Fleury plays, because you have to be so quick now. So I think a lot of what we're doing now is trying to be as efficient as possible, make less and less movements. But when we make them, we have to be explosive in them to get there.
When you were playing, did you ever think about getting into coaching?
It was something I'd say towards the middle end of my career. I'd started doing some hockey camps just to help out with kids back in Colorado, and I really enjoyed it. So I think it was kind of that moment when I started doing some camps that I was like, oh, maybe coaching could be an option down the road. It's just one of those weird situations. Everything kind of aligned at the right time. We had that COVID season cancel everything. I was still training to play. And then kind of the dominoes all fell into position. Got a couple interviews with some teams as far as coaching. And it really, we didn't know if the season was going to happen or not. I had a lot of time to think and kind of evaluate where I was, where my family was at that time. And I wanted to stay in the game, and I love the game and still do. And so it kind of perfect timing, and it fell into place. So it wasn't necessarily I was going to do it, but I think it all aligned because I was meant to do it. I want to be here coaching these kids.
Tell our listeners about the relationship with Freddie Shabbat, the Minnesota Wild goaltending coach, who you've known for a long time.
Yeah, me and Freddie go back quite a while to my Oklahoma City Edmonton Oiler days. My first year, I had the pleasure of having Freddie as our goalie coach when he was up with Edmonton, and he was great. And I was was fortunate enough. I only played three organizations, but somehow I got a lot of different goalie coaches. But Freddie, and you see it today, whenever you, if you, you have the luxury of seeing a goalie session with him, he's always smiling, laughing, making jokes. He's just an amazing human, but he was so good at, and I think a little bit like Fleury, of wanting you to really enjoy the game, but he's also a very hard worker and detail oriented in everything that he does. And so we had that, we got to build our relationship that year, and then just kind of here and there, you know, touch base, say hello. And then obviously when I saw he got the job up in Minnesota and they were looking for a goalie coach, it was an easy phone call to make to touch base with him again.
And obviously he's a great goalie coach because he can't shoot very hard. And so when he's shooting on you to warm you up in practice, you got to feel good about your game, right?
Absolutely. Just hit him in the chest, make him feel good.
All right, Bakker, before I cut you loose, something I call quick hits. It's just five quick questions. Kind of first thing that comes to mind for you. What do you tell your kids about your playing career?
Oh boy. What do I tell them? I tell them that I was really good at sitting on the bench and cheering my teammates on.
Who's the biggest prankster you ever played with?
Biggest prankster. Ooh.
Of course, because of the Fleury Duhaime thing now. I mean, it's on everybody's mind.
Yep. There used to be a lot more of them, but Luke Gazdick was pretty good. I played with him for a while, but he would always be putting waters in people's shin pads and pull them down, it splashes them, or tying skates together, just little things, taping up someone's clothes, putting them in the shower, little things like that. But he was always up to something.
And who was going to mess with him? I mean, he was a heavyweight.
Exactly. No one.
Best spot to go in Austin, Texas.
Best spot. Ooh. If you want just a good coffee and walk around, the Domain in Austin is an awesome place. Got some good shops, great restaurants, good coffee shops. That place is awesome. But head down to South Congress and grab a beer. It's a great, great time.
TV show you're currently watching.
I don't know why I got onto it. Just, I think in season, it's hard to get into full series like Ted Lasso and stuff. I love that. But I've been watching Alone a lot, the Survivor show. So that's just been kind of something I put on before bed and just kind of put you to sleep. But I don't know. Yeah, I've been addicted to that lately.
One goalie for a game seven. Who are you taking, current or past?
I got to go with my idol that I grew up watching, Patrick Waugh.
Hard to dispute that.
Yep.
It was really nice catching up with you. Safe travels the rest of the year at the Iowa Wild. When the offseason hits, we hope you have a great time with the fam. And maybe we'll cross paths in Des Moines here this summer.
Sounds good, Joe. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Richard Bachman, Iowa Wild goaltending coach, kind enough to join me. Another episode of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. Thanks for tuning in.